It is time for Kaleidoscope on KDOM, and today we get to talk with Liz Stahl from the University of Minnesota Extension Office. How are you today?
We're doing good.
Well, we'll dive right into things. We're kind of wrapping up harvest around here.
Well, that's right. Yeah, a lot of the, most all the crop is in. There's just a few things here and there, but of course in field work, people are getting that wrapped up, and we've got snow in the forecast here too, so it's a good time to get that done. But I'm guessing, hoping that will all melt if we do get anything. But also tied with that too, of course, fertilizer. That's a big part of what goes on now too with applications. And just wanted to talk about that a little bit today, especially when we're looking at with tight economics, what people can do and what kind of some recommendations are around fertilizer applications.
It's really important to be smart about it, especially you mentioned, things are expensive and you don't want to waste it.
Well, that's right. And that's one thing. So like you think about phosphorus, for example, that's when you look at generally across most of our area, probably a lot of people, especially they've been using manure, they probably got pretty high soil tests and phosphorus. That's the thing. The likelihood of a response to additional fertilizer when your soils are testing in that very high range for phosphorus, you've only got like a 7% chance that you're going to see an increase in corn yield with an additional phosphorus application. And your expected corn yield without any additional phosphorus would be still 99% of maximum yield. So again, low chance of seeing a return if you're in that very high range. And just as a point of reference, if your soils are testing, say, 21 or more parts per million with a Bray test or 16 or more parts per million with an Olsen test, that's what we call very high. And then even when soils are testing in the high range for phosphorus, so this would be about like 16 to 20 parts per million with the Bray, 12 to 15 parts per million with the Olsen, here you still could expect like 99% of optimal yield if you didn't apply any additional phosphorus for corn, even though you do have now a little higher chance that you might see additional yield, like a 13% chance. But again, that's just one area with tight economics that you could really look hard at, especially if you're testing in those really high ranges. Maybe that's an area where you could, hold off a year in those applications and not get hit with any, yield penalty for that.
That really is not much of a difference, is it?
No. And then, and that's the thing, too. We look at, different nutrient, potassium, of course, that's another biggie. If your soils are testing over 200 parts per million or more, you should be okay here, too, if you didn't put on any additional potassium. Now, this one, Dan Kaiser, he's our nutrient management specialist, he does have more confidence in the phosphorus test than the potassium test. We're just seeing more variability, based on when you take those samples during the year. And that's one thing, you want to take samples same time of year, but moisture of the profile can affect that and so forth. But overall, again, he feels very comfortable that if you're over 200 parts per million, you should be okay, without applying any additional potassium. Doesn't mean, it's bad to do it, but if you need to cut somewhere, that's, again, one area you could potentially look at.
Well, it sounds like before you spend money on phosphorus or potassium, it's testing that you need to do first.
Well, that's so key. Having up-to-date soil tests, that is a great investment. Yes, it costs money to do a soil test, but when you look at how much that costs to do the testing, and you can just do, your basic testing. People can get very detailed in that, too. But again, just having a general soil test as a minimum can really save you a lot of money and just help you make the right decisions for your field, because if you are low on something, you could be hurting your yield and profitability, too. But if you're really high, that helps you make those decisions as well as what to do. And just one thing I really encourage people, when you are getting your soil tests, take a look at where those recommendations are generated from. Are they using university data to generate those fertilizer recommendations? And then also, what university is that? If you send samples out state, for example, they might be using recommendations that are not based on all our testing. because then the university continues to, you know, do research because things do adjust over time. But you want to have results and recommendations that are based on our environment, our soil types, you know, our moisture profiles that we have and so forth. So again, really key to look at where those recommendations are actually being generated from. And you do want to use those university ones. And, of course, we'd say use the University of Minnesota because, again, we've got the research to back up those recommendations.
Well, that's what you're there for.
Well, that is one of the things. That's right. You bet.
So what about nitrogen? Does the same thing apply with it?
Well, no, nitrogen, that's one thing, too. And they have just recently updated the nitrogen guidelines, too. And again, I just was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, why does the university continue to do these tests? It's like, well, yes, our environmental conditions continue to change. We are, you know, we're getting overall more moisture. You know, when you look at those long-term times, you know, springs are happening earlier, having a longer fall. You know, all those conditions are changing. So, again, we got to keep having recent research on knowing, you know, how is that affecting our fertilizer needs, for example. But, again, so nitrogen, those nitrogen guidelines have been updated. They are based on the maximum return to nitrogen. So, really, that's based on a ratio. We don't go off a yield goal. We haven't done yield goals for decades. And many states, you know, in our region do the same thing. We're going this maximum return to nitrogen. So, basically, you look at the price ratio of, you know, how much it costs per pound of nitrogen, and divided that by the price of corn per bushel. Typically, we're at a ratio about 0.1, but, you know, some growers might be closer to 0.5, or excuse me, 0.15. And if you're at that 0.15, well, then your maximum return to nitrogen is going to be a little lower rate. So that's one thing. We do have that corn rate calculator. It's on online, so it's just corn rate calc, so cornratecalc.org. And again, you can just plug in where you're at, the price of nitrogen, what you expect to get for price of corn, and that will pull up what your range of like acceptable nitrogen application would be, and then kind of what that maximum return to nitrogen would be.
Gotcha. So what about applying it? Temperature-wise, are we getting to where it's too cold or too hot, or where are we at with that?
Well, that's one of those things, again, that 50-degree, not making those applications until those soils stabilize at 50 degrees or less at a 6-inch depth, that's just really key. And here again, you know, that's based on, you know, microbial activity in the soil really slows down once you hit 50 degrees in the soil because microbial activity, that's what converts that nitrogen to the nitrate form, for example. So that is a form that is not bound to the soil. You can lose that to the groundwater. You know, so again, that's an environmental concern. It's also, of course, an economic concern because then that nitrogen isn't there for your corn next season. So that's why we keep driving home, hey, you know, 50 degrees, there's a lot of research behind that. This is a really key thing. We should be, you know, especially after this weekend, we should have those temperatures stabilizing now. I was checking, you know, the Minnesota Department of Ag, they have different monitors out throughout the state, and they've been kind of jumping around here because we've had warmer temperatures. Once we get to this weekend, I do expect those temperatures to really stabilize below 50. And that's something you can just check too. Just check at a 6-inch depth. There's soil temperature gauges you can get, or, you know, just like a meat thermometer, really, and you can mark it at the 6-inch depth. Put it in the soil, and you can find out where your temperatures are at.
And again, you're saving money by taking just a few minutes to check that.
Well, that's right, because it can be, you know, it's. I saw people out applying nitrogen, say, you know, middle of October, and just kind of makes me cringe because I know people get pressed for time; they want to get things done, but. Hey, why are you putting that nitrogen out there? You want it to be there for your corn next year. So if you're putting it out too early, you're going to lose some of that. And you just reminded me, too, as far as forms of nitrogen, based on our research, yeah, we just don't recommend using fall urea. I know a lot of people aren't big fans of anhydrous due to the safety concerns, but that is the better form to use in the fall. Of course, in the spring, you're better off if you can apply your nitrogen in the spring because that's closer to when the corn actually needs it. I've got less chance of loss and so forth. But, you know, again, time constraints, a lot of people like to get stuff done here in the fall. Excuse me. But so, again, if you're going to do a fall application, anhydrous would be the form of choice because that does outperform fall urea. But if you're using urea, put that on in the spring. That's going to do better than if you did in the fall. Odds are on the side for that.
Very good. All right, Liz, I suppose we better talk about some classes you got coming up.
Yeah, we're getting the calendars filled up here, but for next month, I just want to put in a plug. We do have our Crop Pest Management Short Course that is coming up December 3rd and 4th in Minneapolis. It's a great program. We have a nice lineup of speakers again. It's with the Crop Production Retailers Association, and that's where you can go onto their website to find the links to sign up for that program. But again, that's kind of like our big premier kickoff for the winter meeting season, and then we'll have many more meetings coming up after that, but that's one that kind of starts off the season here,
and it's going to be here before we know it.
that is true. It's coming up.
All right, Liz, anything else we need to add today?
Well, I just want to put in a plug again for our Extension Crops website. That's at z.umn.edu/crops. If you pull that up, you will get, there's an option there to check for upcoming events. So, again, check that out as more of our winter meetings get put onto that site. Also, again, that's where you can find the resources for, say, our fertility guidelines, different podcasts on, you know, soil fertility. People are making hybrid choices now, for example, too, and just a wealth of information should be right there at your fingertips off our Extension Crops website.
Very good. All right, Liz. Hey, thank you for talking with us today.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. That will do it for Kaleidoscope this morning on KDOM.